a local author in a local setting today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Mary Davidsaver has written a book about clouds over Bishop Hill. We'll find out about that and the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor today on Scribble. That's an intriguing title, Mary.
Yes, and somewhat real, too, because as I was trying to come up with ideas for my book back in 2010, I woke up early one morning and looked out my kitchen window, and there's a cloudy cross floating across the sky towards Galva, and it took me a minute to see what it was and to think, I better get a picture of this. And that's how I got the cover of my book.
Oh, yeah.
That is a real cross, and it just, the timing was perfect to get the eastern morning sun to illuminate.
And did that precipitate the whole book?
No, it was, I'd already started it. 2010, November, was National Novel Writing Month, and that's where I got my first 50,000 words, my first start on trying to form this. But this cross just gave me a perfect way into the story, a nice hook, so to speak.
What determined that? Why did you decide to write a novel? Whatever motivated you to do that?
Well, I came to writing late in life, shall we say, and I was doing features for the Galva News for a few years, 2007, 2008, in that time frame. And most of those were about 600 or 700 words. And I was thinking, you know, walking around Bishop Hill, walking past the old buildings, you know, a novel would be nice, and I would like it to be about Bishop Hill being a character, and seeing the buildings as they were then. They are much better shaped now, but then they needed help, and they needed preservation. Mm-hmm. So I thought, that has to be a theme. I was a silversmith in the blacksmith shop, an artist. I took art classes at the University of Iowa. So it's a natural to think that art's got to be part of it too. And several places that I was looking for information and help said, write a mystery first. It teaches you how to plot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I had to learn how to do that.
That's interesting, though, that you just decide that you're going to write, and that you're going to write a novel, mm-hmm. and then you put together the ingredients. Why don't I do that?
Anybody can do it, yes.
Oh, no.
You say after you've done it, Mary.
Yeah. Well, it took 6 years, and I had to learn a lot of things to get this far and have a lot of help.
I admire your industry and motivation, though. That's very good. I don't think I could keep going for 6 weeks on something, much less 6 years.
Well, particularly something historical, which required, I am assuming, a lot of research.
Not really. I did a little bit of reading here and there, but I lived in Bishop Hill for 24 years. I had a shop for 10 of those years, and I just listened to people. I observed, I walked around, and to the best of my ability, tried to remember all the things. So there's just lots of stories, and I tried to put bits and pieces of all of that in my book.
So does the book take place back in Erik Jansen's time, or is it contemporary?
A little both. Okay, Erik Jansen's been a little bit of a problem, okay? He always was, and I struggled with him for years because, all right, I know all these people, and I didn't want to offend everybody or anybody, I should say. So, yeah, that kind of held me back a little bit, trying to be nice to everyone. But Eric Jansen, I did my best with him, and okay, say May or June, I decided he had to go. Mm-hmm. So I came up with a completely different character, a much nicer, likable person, little bit of romantic possibilities. So the real character that I kept was Olaf Kranz, the folk artist who documented the history of the colony.
Strange eyes looking out at you, right, from his paintings.
Yes, dour, sour-looking eyes. And so I have an encounter with my 103-year-old woman as a 10-year-old back in 1915. So this is the summer before Olaf Kranz died. He died in early January 1916, which 100 years ago. A little more than 100 years. So I didn't get the book published for that anniversary.
Can you read something to us from that to get a flavor of your novel?
Sure. My protagonist is a 22-year-old woman. She has grown up in Bishop Hill. She went to school in Knox and has just graduated. So she's come home for a summer job, which she hopes will be her last summer job. She wants to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she gets involved with this old woman with a near car accident. That has sent her onto a journey to find Olaf Kranz's last portrait that he did in the summer of 1915. So during the course of her adventures with that, she has one particularly bad day. And towards the end of it, she's in the Bishop Hill Park. She's sitting in a swing, and this happens. A dark figure stepped out from the shadows of the bandstand and got quite close before I became aware of its presence. "You shouldn't be out here this late and all by yourself, Miss Shelley," said Winston Maskin with a curt nod. The former mayor of Bishop Hill tipped off his battered baseball cap, revealing a head full of springy white hair. The light illuminating the playground area made his hair glow in the dark. It also flashed off the shotgun resting in the crook of his other arm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's... you got me going. Is this principally a mystery?
Yes, I have always... Well, when I found out what it was, I've been calling it a cozy mystery. Mm-hmm. A cozy has an amateur detective trying to solve a puzzle, the mystery, the crime, you know. And it's fairly bloodless, shall we say, nonviolent. Yes, you have to have a body, but...
I'm immediately thinking how good a book this would be for a book club to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Because... You even hesitated when you called it cozy, because Bishop Hill isn't exactly a cozy place the way, you know. One of the big cozy writer, one of the people that started cozy mysteries was Charlotte Murray Russell from Rock Island.
Yes.
And
yes.
But Bishop Hill, as your character there too, is a strange place. Right?
Well,
it must be haunted. Yeah. It must have ghosts.
It's history.
So is it or isn't it a cozy would be a great thing for a book club to discuss.
Well, I have to agree with you.
You were expressing an argument role.
Right? No. But I think, I mean, in on my mind, I'm thinking, could a book taking place in Bishop Hill be a cozy? Well, yes, because you have that kind of a character, right?
Yeah.
It's obeying some of the rules, but it's bending them too.
Yes.
Which really makes it interesting.
Well, that's the advantage of doing fiction as opposed to nonfiction. This is the Bishop Hill I want. Some of it's what I remember. Some of it is what I would wish for. And I get to change it because it's fiction.
How often did you revise?
A lot. Lots. I can revise... You know, endlessly. Even now, I find things here and there. Not much. Mm-hmm. I've had some really good editors help me with this, thanks to the Midwest Writing Center Press. They did a good job with me. And if I'd published it last year at this time, it wouldn't have been as a good a book. Mm-hmm. So they've really helped me.
Now, how did you hook up with the Midwest Writing Center Press?
Well, early on, when I was wanting to do more with my writing, I drove into Bishop Hill for some of the one-day workshops, pen-in-hand workshops. And then when I moved here 5 years ago, I was able to go to the summer writer conferences, which are 3 days. And I just, you know, there was always something they offered that was helpful for me at the time I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've just been hanging around too much, I guess.
Well, did the writing, was it an arduous task? Did you write every day? Did you write now and then, or what?
I would say it's more now and then, because I would write, and then I'd have to think about it and let it sit for a while, because, you know, you can go back to things with new eyes, and you can see the problems. But also, you can see the parts that are really good, too, and, you know.
Right. Did you outline it before you went, or did you just kind of let the character go where the character felt like going?
I'm a pantser, as in seat of the pants.
Okay.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a way that many authors go.
It's a little more work.
Yeah.
It's more work, and I would truly love to have an outline, but that requires a lot more organization than I might have.
Well, I think, too, it might, I don't know that it would be a straitjacket, but once you commit yourself to an outline, you have to kind of stick with it, and flights of fancy and good ideas will occur along the way, mm-hmm. but in order to use them, you have to bend the outline a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't think there is one school of writing a novel. Or are you insistent on that role?
No. I think everybody, you know, no two people are alike. And some people, Faulkner, you know, for the fable, if you go to the wall of his house in Oxford, Mississippi, there's a complete outline of the entire book that he wrote on one wall of his bedroom.
Really?
Yeah, wow. But normally I don't think he did. My preference is to do what Mary has done. You know, and which Huck Finn, you know, eventually Twain started writing Huck Finn, but then pretty soon Huck Finn took over and says, Twain, get out of here. And Twain, toward the end of the book, yanked it back and said, I want it to be my book, and screwed up the ending. But I think the way to do the book is for the person doing the writing to learn as much as the reader is going to learn, right, mm-hmm. by doing the book and letting that character develop.
One of the signal works of art in the last century and a half is The Ring Cycle by Wagner. And I remember reading in his notes, he complained that the thing was changing under his hand. It was not what he intended to write.
Right.
It was going in a different direction. And I think that must be exciting when you're telling a story to all of a sudden see it move away you hadn't thought about. Mm-hmm. Did that happen to you in the course of this?
Sometimes, yes, I've had characters give me really good ideas and, you know, say things that, oh, that's good. And because of the computer, I was able to go back and fix it, you know, so, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't pop up totally by itself. So both of those things happened.
How have people in Bishop Hill reacted to the book?
Very good so far. I had two opening launch parties on Ag Days, and I had real good book sales. So mm-hmm. I'm quite pleased, and I have books at the Colony Store and in the blacksmith shop.
Now, do you have to go to Ag Sales and blacksmith shops to buy the book, or how do I get it?
It's also available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. We are, well, it's a new experiment with the Midwest Writing Center Press. It's their first venture into that world, for both of us, actually. So we're all learning new things.
Yeah, and that's new things, and yet there's an old skill at work here in writing. Do you write longhand at all, or it's all computer?
I make a lot of notes. I have big yellow notepads, and I make notes of things I want to accomplish at different times, and I check those off as I go through them. But, yeah, I sit at the computer most of the time.
I've found that a complication because I will make notes and then go back to them and can't read them. I have no idea what that's all about.
That is definitely possible. Yes, been there.
Oh, my. Are you gestating a second novel now, or are you just recovering from this one?
I am recovering from this one. I'm enjoying the parties because, you know, hey, any excuse for a party.
Right.
But, I would like to do a sequel in the same timeline. This book takes place in 2008, and that is before the windmills, even though that, you know, I don't have them in here and don't really talk about them. Like I say, it's my world. I get to do what I want.
Some of the same characters continue?
Yes, that way I'll have some of the same characters, because let's face it, I made all these bad guys, these villains, and I really like them a whole bunch. So, yeah, some of them have to come back. And what, I have a Swede.
What is it about bad characters? They're the ones that grab your imagination.
I don't know, but they do.
Dostoevsky's
As Keats said, you know, Shakespeare had as much fun inventing Iago as Imogene.
Yeah, but the thing is, Dostoevsky spent his whole life trying to write about a good person. He had great success with the bad ones. It wasn't until he got to Alyosha in The Brothers Karamazov that he brought off a convincing good character.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but...
I think it's conflict. Okay, a good story has got to have conflict, mm-hmm. And they're going to give it to you.
Well, there's no conflict on this now that you have a book that is going to be of great interest to people, especially in Bishop Hill, but all around the area and, with any luck, across the country.
Yes.
It's always interesting to
yes.
see how this develops, this yeah. Mary.
Mary
David Saver, who is the author of Clouds Over Bishop Hill, and you've got to see the cover to see that striking cloud, which gave her a somewhat deeper inspiration to finish the novel. Thanks again, Mary.
Thank you.
And now, let's see if we have something to thank Garrison Keillor for. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Well, Roald, you've heard of the Brexit vote, haven't you?
I have heard of the Brexit vote.
That was followed by a lawsuit. Someone contended that the people in referendum did not have the authority to do something, to decide whether or not to leave the European Union, that the authority in England reposed in Parliament, and the High Court said, that's right, the people don't decide this, Parliament decides it. And that brought up the interesting question between authority and government, which just happens to be the subject of the sleeping sovereign, the invention of modern democracy by Richard Tuck. Richard Tuck gave a series of lectures. He's from Harvard, but he was at Cambridge. And he gave lectures on, well, mostly on Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan, but it had to do with the business of authority and government. And the idea is, who is really in charge? And in medieval times, a Frenchman, Jean Bodin, set forth a theory, you know, that the people are ultimately in charge, even though there is a monarch. And while the monarch is in charge, he is truly in charge, but when he dies, then his successor is validated by the people agreeing to be ruled by that monarch. But the whole question of who has authority, and Hobbes came up with this metaphor of the sleeping monarch. Says the monarch, he believed, of course, in the divine right of kings.
Right.
But he said the monarch has the authority, but he appoints his ministers, and then he goes to sleep, and the ministers run things. And as long as he's asleep, they're in charge. When he wakes up, then he has the authority. in this country, Brexit was a controversial vote. We had a controversial vote in this country. But there's no question in anyone's mind that the people are the ultimate authority.
Right.
The little problem is that the person who won the Electoral College vote did not win the popular vote. And although we've always accepted the outcome of the electoral vote, every time there's been this question, well, what about the popular vote? Who has the authority? If everybody voted, I suppose it would be pretty clear cut. But we have this system that separates authority and government. And so the people of this country are the monarchs. And we wake up every two to 4 years and we appoint ministers, a president, a Congress, and so on. And they have, without question, the authority to do things. But in Britain, they don't have a written constitution. A written constitution is something that we dreamed up over here. And then it spread over to France and others. But the English don't have one. They have, I forget what it's called, some kind of act of authority. But anyway, it transfers the power to Parliament. But otherwise, everything is by precedent and historical, tracks. But now the High Court has said, no, the people don't have the authority. Parliament has it. I don't know how they're going to deal with that. But this book starts with Baudin, and it goes through the writings of other people who dealt with this subject. He wrote in medieval times. That was followed by Hobbes with Leviathan. Then there was a Dutchman, Hugo Grotius, and a German, Samuel von Pufendorf, who did commentary on this. And what Richard Tuck has done is go through these very careful arguments and to try to help us define what we mean by democracy and who has the ultimate authority and how it is transferred to government and the relationship between authority and government. It is a pretty thorny book, I'll tell you.
Sounds that way.
Yeah, it is. And but it's fascinating. I thought it was really interesting, and I got into it. And I must say, it's a paperback from Cambridge University Press. I don't know if I'm going to urge anybody to run out and buy it, but it's an interesting question. And it comforts me to think there are people who take all these things so seriously, they get into them very, very deeply.
Well, and probably we ought to all take them a little more seriously than we do.
I think we ought to. The uninformed vote is kind of a danger. And there's always been an argument, you know, as to how free voting should be. And I don't think that's ever been completely settled in everyone's mind. But I know one thing, it's settled. Time to call up the theme and wend our way out of here. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We thank you for your attention today. The book we've been talking about is A Sleeping Sovereign by Richard Tuck. And we hope you'll be back with us next week for another edition of Scribble.